Hey guys, welcome to the Mo Show podcast, episode 152 with Ziad Al-Ma'youf, the people's champ, back for a second time on the podcast. Genuinely enjoy speaking to this guy whenever I get a chance. Did I mention he's 8-0? Well, now you know. Just before we kick off, guys, the CAFT app is something you need to navigate your way through the district. Hard to keep up with the things that are opening there by way of restaurants, coffee shops, retail outlets. Download the app. I put it in the show notes below. It'll really help your experience there. We have another message from Whoop. So I started wearing a Whoop 7-8 months ago and I dropped 15 kilos. And maybe more impressively, I managed to keep that weight off because with Whoop, I am now able to track everything in my life. They just launched their new product, the Whoop Gen 5, which offers heart screener, which offers ECG readings, and also offers something called Health Span that helps you combat the aging process by telling you what you should do more of and what you should do less of according to your lifestyle. One last message before we kick off. Noon is a company we recently partnered up with. I want to tell you guys about Noon Minutes. They offer thousands of products in just 15 minutes by way of groceries, household supplies, electronics, etc. No one does it quicker. No one does it better. And it's now available across most major cities in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, Jeddah, and Dammam. So do download the app, also linked in the show notes below. As well as Supermall, the ultimate destination for fast premium shopping, whether it's the latest tech, skincare essentials, or everyday must-haves, Noon has you covered. Again, currently live across all major cities in Saudi Arabia. Bottom line, Noon has got you covered. Stay tuned for more and enjoy the episode.
So when you got out into, when you put yourself out there and your first fight and you suited up and people are watching you and you're representing the country, was fight number 8, you still get the same butterflies that you got in fight number 1?
I get more, you know, more. Yeah, I get more butterflies in fight number 8 than I did with my first fight. But only because the expectations are higher. The pressure is kind of like, I wouldn't say more, but it's louder. Mm. The pressure is louder, the expectations are higher. And what I need to live up to matters more and more with each fight. And then with each fight, I'm getting closer to that bigger goal of making more history, or making, you know, writing really the piece of history where I could become Saudi's first ever world champion. So the more fights I have, the harder the opponents get, but the closer I get to that goal as well. But not because, you know, I get more butterflies, it doesn't mean that I deal with it less. So the butterflies are more, but of course I deal with that a lot better now than I did during my first fight, you know, when you know nothing. But I think that's part of the beauty of it. I didn't know anything. I didn't know what to expect of myself. No one knew what to expect of the first ever Saudi boxer who no one's ever seen and no one knows and all of that. So there wasn't that much to live up to. But now there's a lot to live up to.
Looking back, last 2-3 years, did you ever expect the support, the fandom, the personality that you've become? Front cover of GQ a few days ago. was that ever something that that shock you? You're like, my goodness, you know, I prayed for this, but God, I didn't expect all this. Do you ever have that kind of conversation with yourself?
So you know what? I always knew that it was going to happen. I just didn't ever think it was going to happen this big, this fast. You know, Mo, the support, it, so I knew that if the support was going to be there, it was going to be big. So if the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia supports, when they trust big and they support big.
It might take a second to get there.
Exactly.
But when you're him, you're not going to find that kind of support from another country.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. But the thing is, when I started training, I'm 24 now. I started training at 11. When I was 11, up until I made my debut at 22, there was no evidence of that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia will invest in boxing. they'll back boxing. They want to, you know, really focus on boxing. So I never really thought that the support was going to be like this. Right now, like you said, the support is from top to bottom. You know, from the thousands attending at the arena or the millions watching at home, the Saudis. But then when you talk about the leadership, you know, the custodian of the two holy mosques, His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince, through Vision 2030 that enabled, you know, not only me, but so many, I wouldn't just say talents, I would say generational talents. So many generational talents from Saudi Arabia, in Saudi Arabia, that were really waiting for that green light. We were equipped. We had the skill. We had the passion. We had the passion, the passion, the passion. We had it. We had the drive, the ambition, but we didn't have the green light just yet. And when the leadership gave us the green light, especially through Vision 2030, it was easy. It was easy because all of a sudden you're hearing about not only the first ever Saudi boxer, but more importantly, you're hearing about the first ever director, the first ever, you know, painter, the first ever, you know, astronaut, yeah, the first ever this, the first ever that. You're hearing about it, but we never doubted if we'd hear about it. What we didn't think would happen was how fast we'd hear about it. And that's what the world is thinking, I guess. You know, they didn't think it would only be 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then all of a sudden you're not only seeing talents coming up just for the sake of talents coming up, but we're coming up, making noise, achieving, making history. And once we achieve and we make history, we achieve more and we make more history. So the support is there from the kingdom like nowhere else, and it's unprecedented. We've never seen support like that to talents, athletes, and just the current and the future generation of Saudis in whatever they want to do. So to answer your question, I always knew that the support was going to be there just because of how much I trust the kingdom and the leadership, but I just never knew, like you said, that there was this thirst for not only a boxer or an athlete, but there was this thirst of a figure, you know, of a brand, a figure who can really bridge between the Western world and the Arab world, break the language barrier, and do it while fighting as well, which is just symbolic to the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. You're not doing any other sport or any other hobby, but you're fighting, and you're fighting against international opponents. I always refuse to fight Arab opponents, not only because I want to empower Arab and Saudi opponents, I would rather not fight them, but because I have a point to prove. I have a point to prove where I only want to fight international opponents, because we have never seen a Saudi and we have never seen an Arab, and especially that Arab being from the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, to fight against all the opponents from the nations and the countries who are so-called on top, but I choose to fight them. And we've never seen somebody win and beat them in that fashion. Everybody, I hate the word I, so I'll say we. Everybody we fought, as in the kingdom, everybody with me, my team, everybody we fought is top three ranked in their country in their weight class. And I'm only 8 fights in. I haven't started fighting for titles yet. I'm still in 8 rounders. I didn't even go to the 10 and 12 rounders. But every single person I fought is top three ranked in their country. And given that I had no amateur experience, but I'm being matched like I'm an Olympic medalist. That's what I want, because we're here to prove a point.
You haven't lost.
Yeah.
And all your opponents were top three ranked in their countries. So it's not like you fought 8 bums. You fought people who were challenging for you, you know. And you're 8-0 for the first professional boxer out of Saudi Arabia. Did you celebrate that? Did you look at that? Do you say, I'm 8-0? That's amazing. Or is that not something that you think about often?
No, I think about when I'm going to become 9-0.
Good answer.
You know, yeah, you dwell on the past, you stay there.
Mm.
You dwell on the past, good or bad, then you're going to stay there. And if you want to progress from the past you've achieved or the present you're living, then you really have to start improving the now so you could get to tomorrow. Mm. But you keep thinking about yesterday, you'll just stay at yesterday. So I know I don't really celebrate the 8 wins, but it is important to recognize and to really note that I do celebrate it when I'm fighting it. So when I'm fighting my 8th fight, when it's time to celebrate my 8th fight, I don't ever let the size of that occasion take away from the moment. So I never let the butterflies, the pressure, the doubt, the fear, the worry, I never let any of that take away from how good this moment is, how memorable this moment is, how historical this moment is. So I enjoy it. I soak it all up. I take it all in. I enjoy it when it's time to enjoy it. But once the moment is over, it's over.
It's on to the next one.
On to the next one.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the next one doesn't necessarily, when I say I'm looking for 9-0, doesn't mean I'm only thinking about that fight. What I'm thinking about is training today, preparing today, so I'm ready for that fight. So I think that's just something that's very important with how my career is moving and how to really carry that weight that's on my back moving forward.
It's a good approach. Not resting on your laurels. Celebrate it tonight. Move on.
Exactly.
To the next one. Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, every year I keep thinking that, my God, do we own the boxing world and how happy the world are. I read YouTube comments on whatever fights. And you see people from all over the world saying, thank you, Ma'ali, Mustashar Turki al-Sheikh, for what you've done for the sport. You've saved it. Americans, Australians, Brits, Dutch, Germans, they keep saying you've saved the sport. I don't know much about boxing and where it was before. I remember tuning into, obviously, you know, Tyson's era and all that. But you look at where the sport is now, they're fighting in Times Square, for example, or whether it's Wembley in London and you're selling out Wembley for 100,000 spectators. You look at what Ma'ali Mustashar did. Saved the sport?
I wouldn't even say it saved the sport, because the sport was far, far away from being saved. I would say he honestly revived, even isn't good enough to say. I'd say he just recreated it. Recreated the sport of boxing again.
It was almost dead. It was almost dead.
It was dead. It was dead. We hadn't seen the best fight, the best, the way they do now. And we actually, not even the way they do now, we didn't see it at all. We've never seen the way the best are fighting the best ever, because there was no person who would sit down, who would get that promoter and this promoter. And to make it easier on anyone who doesn't understand boxing, when I say this promoter and that promoter, think of them as TV. Each fighter, you know, a specific amount of fighters is signed to a specific TV. So you have, for example, NBC and Sky Sports. NBC has a specific number of fighters. Sky Sports have a specific number of fighters, and they never let their fighters fight each other, because whose platform would televise it? And then whose fighter is going to be the A side? Whose fighter is going to generate the money? Who has more rights? So it was always this problem. But then Ma'ali Turki al-Sheikh came, and when he took over boxing, he completely brought back and recreated the golden era of boxing, the golden age of boxing, where we haven't seen since the 80s, since, I wouldn't even say the 80s, barely, then the 90s, where you had what I call them the four kings. You had Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, and Marvin Hagler, these four. And then you had, you know, even a little bit before that, you had Mike Tyson, then you had Muhammad Ali, then all these fighters, and then we'd always see number one ranked fight number two ranked. We always saw number three ranked fight number four ranked, because you have to climb up. And
so the sport was in a good place back then.
Back then, yeah.
And then 2000s, 2010.
But a good place doesn't mean the place that it is in now. Now, the way that boxing is now after, you know, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia's intervention and Maali Turki al-Sheikh's takeover, it's the best it's ever been in history, in the history of the sport. Because not only do we see the best fight the best, we see the best fight the best in spectacular fashion. We're breaking records of attendance. We're breaking records of the first ever boxing fight to be held at this venue,
yeah,
or that venue. The promotional videos, the marketing, the media.
So good.
We're seeing stuff that, and because I have all my training camps abroad, so I always travel and I always move around. And one thing I always hear again and again and again is, it's not going to get any better than this.
Yeah,
it can't. So, it can't get any better than this. Every fight, I hear it. How can it get any better?
By who? Who's
by
saying
everyone?
That?
Any the Europeans, the North Americans, the South Americans, everyone always says, how can it get any better? I'm sure this is the best. And then we raise the bar.
It's better.
And we do it better. They say the same, and somehow we do it better. Sometimes even I say that. Sometimes I see one of those promotional videos and one of those fights being announced, and I always say, this is the peak. How are we ever going to top this? And then we top it. Because Mo, I always say, before the Kingdom's intervention and before His Excellency Turki al-Sheikh came and intervened and took over the sport of boxing, we used to dream about fights and we'd never see them. We'd only dream about them. After the takeover, after the Saudi takeover, we now see the fights before we even have time to dream about them. After one fight is done, you're not even dreaming about the rematch, but you see it signed and done. It's going to happen and announced. We don't even have time to dream anymore. You know why? Because it's all coming true before we dream it. So in this era of boxing today, it represents the Kingdom. It aligns with Vision 2030, which is what is really important. You know, our career in boxing, Maali Turki al-Sheikh's takeover in boxing is moving at the exact same path, making the exact same waves and achieving the exact same stuff that we want to do with Vision 2030. Mm. You know, break the language barrier, that's what we're doing. Change perceptions and conceptions on the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, that's what we're doing in boxing. If it's through Maali or through my career. If it's...
Making it acceptable to wear Saudi attire in Times Square, I've never seen that in my lifetime.
Everywhere. I haven't seen it.
That's when I realized that if you can wear Ghutr Uigad in Times Square and not get jumped...
Yeah, people love it.
And being celebrated, I played that video maybe 100 times. And when I saw that, because I lived in the States around September 11th, I know what it's like. You wear that in Times Square, you know, you're probably not going to leave it with it on your head.
Yeah.
He walked and he's rubbing shoulders with the crowd. That's anybody true. Could reach over and do yeah, something.
He's walking through.
People are clapping him.
Yeah.
People are taking selfies true. With him. That's obviously all the work that they've done before that has led to this moment. But for the New Yorkers to celebrate someone in Saudi attire in Times Square, as tedious as that sounds, is when I saw that, okay, we've reached it.
Yeah.
Soft power.
See, that's the thing. You think we've reached it when we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
We're just scratching the surface. And the only people who will understand that we're just scratching the surface is the Saudis. We know what we're capable of. Mm. And like I was saying, in today's era, the way things are happening in Saudi, be ready to all talents, to all dreamers, to all those with ambition, be ready.
It's so good for the industry all over the world.
Everything is going to come.
A kid your age or even younger in Brazil or Nicaragua or Cuba, you know, the countries that maybe don't have the kind of resources that first world countries have. But now if you make a name for yourself in a third world country, whichever country that might be, your career as a boxer, you have so much more opportunities than you did 5 years ago. Game changer.
We gifted to the world. Our gift to the world is our intervention in sports and entertainment.
Why boxing? Why is that Turki Alasheikh's favorite sport? Why boxing?
Favorite sport? It's
why do we own the boxing world?
It's the love of his life.
Boxing.
When you speak about Maali al-Mustashar Turki al-Sheikh, you have to speak about boxing. He is actually a true, true fan. He loves the sport.
I heard him speak about it on an English podcast.
He loves the sport. You know, he knows the history of the sport in and out.
Mm-hmm.
He actually went through, he was on another podcast in the US when we had the Times Square fight in New York. And then he spoke to them. He was like, look, I never discriminate. That's what he said. He said, I don't like to discriminate. I don't like to speak about race or nationality. But I think boxing would be in a very great place if we have a black world champion, a black heavyweight world champion. Everybody around him was like, why do you say that? He's like, because if you look at the numbers that are generated when a black world champion, when a black heavyweight world champion has the title, when you look at the gate numbers, the tickets, the TV, anyways, I'm only saying this because nobody else would know this piece of information except for Maali. Honestly, nobody else would go research that deep into boxing to know that numbers are better when there's a black heavyweight champion, and that's how it's nobody ever even thought of going that deep, really passionately researching into the sport like that. So he loves the sport, but it's the clash between entertainment and the sport of boxing that we never knew would happen that way. He really took two passions and made them one. You know, his passion for filmmaking, for the commercials, for the arts.
They're so good, those.
Everything. And then he took that and he mixed it with the sport of boxing. So I really just think, you know, of course, you know, that this is all through the vision and the leadership of His Royal Highness the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who really just had that idea of where he wants to see the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and how he wants to see the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia being portrayed. And if, you know, if there's someone who's going to do that with boxing, it's going to be Maali Turki al-Sheikh. And he is doing that. So he is a true fan and he loves the sport. And I see that with my career. So I see the way he plans for my career. I see the way where he really gets passionate about my fights and my announcements for my fights, even who I should fight. And he always loves that I'm in tough fights. He loves seeing 50-50 matchups because he thinks that, you know, a boxer has to be a fighter. But, you know, to be a fighter, he really wants to see what do you have inside of you.
Yeah.
So I see that passion live and then and directly. But I feel like so many people don't understand that all the ideas that you see happening, all the videos, the commercials, the marketing, the entertainment, the matchups happening, all anything you see, even if it's not in boxing, the movies, the sequels, the everything, it's all his idea. So it's easy to think he has a great team around him that maybe think for him, that maybe, but the team is for the execution. The ideas and the vision and the thoughts come from Maali Turki al-Sheikh direct. He loves this. He loves everything he's doing it for. He loves the purpose of why he's doing it for. And he went on an interview and he said, I didn't do anything. He said, I didn't do anything. It's not my vision. It's not my role. He said, I'm merely just a soldier. He said, I'm just a chess piece to what is happening in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, you know, through the leadership and His Royal Highness the Crown Prince.
Yeah, you can tell that everything that was on his mood board or wish list as a kid, he was told to go out and do it. And you can't fake passion.
You can.
And that's clearly something that he's passionate.
Especially in this sport.
Yeah. By the way, when I saw Riyad season in LA and in Wembley, and I saw that, okay, this brand is now global and they're executing through Silla on a level that any of the local executors or event management companies are executing. I was like, it's become like a roadshow, Riyadh season, that they can pop up anywhere in the world and put together a first-class event. And I think when people realize that it's a Saudi company, Saudi brand, Saudi everything as part of this, for them, it's going to be news. Well, I didn't know Saudi are so into, and it breaks the stereotypes, you know, it breaks the misconceptions.
So this is all part of a bigger picture, right? Where this is all like you think about it as like a tourism campaign, you know, where so even when you go to the fights in London or in New York or anywhere, before you sit on the chair, you have the Visit Saudi book on your chair. You go and you pick up that book and you see where you can go, how you can go there, the flights you can book, you know, this airline, that airline, from whichever part of the world you're from.
That's
so cool. It's all part of a bigger picture where we're not just making big fights internationally. We're campaigning for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia internationally. We're campaigning for our success internationally. But it's also it's the idea of, you know, when I speak to people internationally now about boxing and Riyadh season, they think it's a city from how well campaigned it is, from how well promoted it is. They're like, oh man, I really want to go to Riyadh season. What do you mean you want to go to Riyadh season? You know, they think it's a city, and that is the goal. Have it on their tongues so strongly and so much where they think it's something bigger than just the events. They think it's something bigger than just, you know, the fights. They really want to go to Saudi Arabia now. They want to see the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They want to visit, see the resorts, the hotels, the activities, you know, actually see what Riyadh season has to offer, but also meet the people.
Yeah.
And the people who, honestly, when you visit Saudi, the people you meet always leave a stamp on your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
They leave a permanent stamp on your heart.
Yeah.
You know, so
the kindness.
That it's the kindness, the hospitality. Mm. It's what every single, I'm in the boxing scene, so I can only speak for that. But every single fighter today, if they've been to Saudi Arabia, they speak about the hospitality.
Mm.
What's more even, you know, amazing is the fighters who haven't been to Saudi Arabia speak about the hospitality.
How so?
Because the ones who have been there go back home and speak about it.
Dude, they're not going to be treated like that in any other.
So it's just the people who can randomly invite you for the meal, the people who are going to randomly invite you to dinner.
Yeah.
CNN came, they were writing an article for the hidden gem areas in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
CNN did?
Yeah. And
a positive article.
Yeah, no.
About us.
Yeah, yes, actually. And they wrote about the hidden gem areas and places to go in Saudi Arabia, depending on its people. And then so CNN came to us and they were interviewing me and they were like, Zizo, what's one place, you know, that you love that when a tourist comes, if they see that place, you don't usually know about it. You are not usually told to go there. But if you go and if you see it, it will leave a lasting, you know, feeling, emotion, imprint. It will really leave a stamp on your heart. You know what I said?
Al-Ula?
No.
What?
I said a Saudi's house. I swear. I said you go into a Saudi's house.
Yeah.
You feel, not see, you feel the generosity.
Yeah. You're screwed. You're screwed. You know why? Because you'll never be able to replicate that experience.
Ever. Yeah. And even the woman that was interviewing me from CNN, she was so shocked I said that. I was like, if you end up in Saudi and you end up becoming close enough to someone in Saudi, don't even ask to go to their house because they'll invite you to their house.
Yeah.
And once you go, and you see the generosity and you see the hospitality and you see the vibes of maybe the cousins and the brothers together. But even better so, if you are lucky enough to go into a Saudi house where the grandparents are still alive, your life is a different life. If you meet one of the grandparents in that house and you see how really our grandparents are one of those, they're the heart of the house, the ones who joke, the ones who laugh, the ones who... So if you are lucky enough to do that, that's one hidden gem place in Saudi Arabia that you'd never think of, but matters the most.
Can I just put a cherry on top of that? And probably the most beautiful part of what you just said was across... I would like to add to what you just said by saying across all means of income, you will find that generosity.
100%.
With people who are barely getting by.
That's
true.
With
people in the middle, and obviously with people who are higher up. But across that unified level of hospitality, irrespective of your means of income.
Very true.
And that's really where it, because it's amazing. Okay, it's not that impressive if you're going to be generous and you're loaded. But for those across, I mean, I've seen it in places on the road. I do a lot of driving, Jeddah Riyadh, Jeddah Al-Ula, and if I'm filling up gas somewhere, or you get people, you know, do you need anything? Are you good? And you know, this guy, you can tell that, you know, he's living out here in the middle of nowhere, but he's ready to help in any which way he can.
Yeah. And that's why I said, not only see the generosity, but feel it.
Yeah.
Once you enter the home, it's a different feeling. The generosity you feel in our homes here in the kingdom is not the same. It's not the same. And you know, something that you don't see at all anywhere is how we leave our doors always open.
Open, yeah.
The doors are always open.
Yeah.
Even at my house, when I'm talking to my friends, I'm telling them literally and figuratively, the door is always open.
Mm.
You know, unannounced. Just come in, walk in, and...
But you know, there are towns in Saudi where that's actually the case.
The door
is actually open.
The door...
I've seen it.
Yeah, you know, my town and, you know, my part in Riyadh, honestly, the door is always open, never closes. But not only to my friends, but... In the kingdom, anyone who needs anything, just go knock on someone's door.
Yeah, you'll find a helping hand.
Knock on someone's door. Anyone hungry, you'll never find someone who's hungry. You'll never find someone who needs anything. You'll never find someone begging for anything. You know why? All they have to do is knock on a Saudi door and it's there.
Yeah. And you won't find a fridge full of water bottles in neighborhoods.
In neighborhoods, you know? Yeah. So... No, the kingdom is honestly some place special today, you know, and the world is starting to see that, but we're also doing very, very special things.
They are. Actually, when I say Saudi Arabia these days, there's less of a head tilt and a longer conversation than ever. I spoke to a few of the Dakar rally drivers. They said the first couple of times when they fell over or they had a flat tire and people came to them, they were like, oh my God, here goes again. Just like when I was in Africa or in South America,
yeah.
Because the last 20 years was 10 years Africa, 10 years South America. So they thought that they were about to get jumped. Little did they know that the Saudis were like, get on your bike, we'll push start you. They were shocked. They actually said three things in Saudi. Safety, number one, we didn't have that in Africa or South America. They said internet connectivity, we didn't have that in Africa or South America. And third thing is quality of food. They were shocked with the quality of food. You know, for your $3-4 Bukhari rice and all that, I mean, it's cheap as chips.
Yeah.
And you're getting a hot meal. You're not getting that of quality at that price point in the two last continents that they were racing on. Words from drivers who race in all three continents.
Everyone talks about it.
Yeah.
Who isn't talking about the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia today and who isn't talking about the way...
Haters.
That we...
Yeah.
But even for them, it's becoming harder to say anything.
It is. It reminds me of the Homer Simpson gif when he goes back into the bushes.
So that's yeah.
Kind of like who they are today.
Exactly that.
When I spoke to Anthony Joshua 2 years ago and... I asked him, like, going into tomorrow's fight, it was with Usyk, the first one, Usyk. Is it more the physique that you're in, the approach you have to this fight, how hard training camp was, what goes into whether you'll win tomorrow or not? And he pointed to his head, said, it's a mind, it's all about in here. You are an old soul. I know you practice all those things, and I can't believe you're 24, mashallah. Do you practice the power of positivity and self-talk? Does that help you when going into a fight?
It's what helps most. So the sport is 99% mental, 1% physical. What I really discovered only recently in my last fight was the power of positive thoughts and self-talk and positive self-talk. So positive self-talk and positive thoughts can change your life. Because let me ask you this. You control your thoughts, or do your thoughts control you?
You control.
You control your thoughts.
You control your thoughts.
But 99% of the time, we let our thoughts control us.
Yeah.
And we think that there is no way out. There is no way out of thinking that specific way in that specific situation, because these are my emotions and my thoughts are that way, so I'm trapped. The way out of feeling a specific way or thinking a specific way is how you talk to yourself, is how you perceive the situation, and what are you saying to yourself. So in the build-up to my last fight, I was in training camp for 8 weeks, 2 months. And I was coming off a draw. So I had a very tough fight in November with a very, very tough Mexican fighter, and it was a draw. But it was fight of the night. It stole the show. It was amazing. One of my favorite fights. So much I learned from that fight. But when I am preparing for another fight, and I have to convince myself that I am going to win, it becomes a lot harder when you're coming off a draw. So I'm thinking a specific way, and my thoughts are a specific way, but the only way, I got tired of thinking it every single day. I got tired of the feeling of, am I going to win? Because I really love the feeling of, I am going to win. It's just, how am I going to win?
Reframing it.
I loved that feeling, and that feeling was there before my draw. So my career was peaking, and it's up, and I'm winning, and I have a winning streak going on. But then that draw was like a speed bump, just as a small pause in the tracks. And I really want to touch on that draw, but after I talk about that positive self-talk. So I was thinking a specific way in training camp of, am I going to win, am I not? But then I had to really research and look into the power of positive self-talk. Mo, I started speaking to myself, and the things that you will say to yourself will 100% change how you feel about yourself and how you think of yourself and how you think of a situation. Because the mind doesn't know the difference. The mind doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you think about it and how you are feeling about it that determines how the mind is going to go through it and how it's actually going to run it in your head. So when I am thinking about, I feel like I might not win this fight. What am I going to do if I don't win this fight? What if I draw again? What if I lose this time? That's how I was thinking. And it was affecting my performance in camp. But I was only thinking that because I was getting the usual emotions of pressure, doubt, worry, expectations, stress, anxiety. All these emotions are very normal when you are building up to a huge occasion. And I always had these emotions. It's just I never had these emotions coming off a draw. So all of a sudden, when I have these same emotions that I've been having for 7 fights, now I'm getting these same set of emotions for my 8th fight, but I had a different result in my 7th fight. not a win, but a draw, I started feeling differently about it. I started dealing with it differently, and I started thinking about it differently only because I let myself go into that trap. So 5 weeks away from the training camp, not even 4 weeks or even 3 weeks away from the training camp being done, I would have one bad week after another. First week, bad. Second week, bad. Third week, up until the fifth week, bad weeks. Then I said, I'm tired. I started saying to myself that when I would get the thoughts of, what if I don't win this fight? I would just start saying to myself, first, I would address the thought. It's okay. You're only thinking that way because you drew your last fight, but you're going to win this fight. So I wouldn't just dismiss that thought or dismiss those feelings or emotions. I would address them, but in a positive way. It's okay.
Who taught you this?
TED Talks on YouTube.
Do you have a therapist that you work with?
I have a sports mental performance coach. Okay. I have a sports psychologist that I work with. I've been working with him for 3 years. His name is Haytham Ghaito.
Because it's very wise to not... I think people think that they're doing the right thing in dismissing a negative thought, address it, reframe it, and then approach it in a positive way.
You dismiss the thought, it will run after you. You run away from a thought, the more it runs after you. You run away from a problem, the more the problem will run after you. You run away from someone, the more that someone will keep lingering up there. So they're still running after you. But address the situation in a positive way, then dismiss it in a positive way, then start reframing that thought. So then I just, you say that, I was like, I'm only thinking that way and I'm only feeling that way because I drew my last fight, but I'm going to win this fight. And then I would, as crazy as it sounds, when you start talking to yourself in a positive way, you kind of feel the chemicals changing in your head. You kind of feel your body language changing. You kind of feel that, you know, those superhero emotions, all of a sudden you're so confident in the result and not so confident in that how you are gonna win or how you are gonna achieve, but you're confident that no matter what the result is, win or lose, it's a positive result because you are gonna be positively talking to yourself. So I was like, I am going to win. When I'm worried now, instead of saying I'm worried because of my opponent, I say it's okay to be worried. It's another fight. You've been worried for 8 fights. It's just you're worried a little bit more this time because you drew your last fight.
Mm.
But you're going to win this one. I used to say that. The mind doesn't know the difference. Even if you don't have the evidence to back it up, when you are doing positive self-talk, when you are talking to yourself in a positive way and you're fighting your mind, you control your thoughts don't control you. But if you don't control your thoughts, the thoughts will control you.
Yeah.
So talk to yourself. Even if it's fake, fake it till you make it is not just in action, but it's in intention as well. It's in thoughts as well. Keep saying the fake stuff until it's real. Because the more you say something, even if you don't have the evidence to back it and it feels fake, you will start feeling that it's actually real. And all of a sudden, how is something real when you feel like it's real? How is any of this real? It feels real. It feels real. It feels real.
Mm.
So when you feel like it's real inside of you, it is real.
You created it.
You created it. And that's why, you know, and like, for example, in the Quran, it says, in the a'mal wa niyyat, right? This is not just based on, you know, your actions are based on your intentions, or how you will be judged for your actions is just based on intentions. No, I honestly do believe, and I have went through experiences myself, and so have you, and so has, you know, anyone we know, where before something happens, you have to intend it. You have to intend for it to happen. So I feel like that's what that sentence means sometimes as well. So it's not only about the action after it happens. I think it also is about the action before it happens. You want to win? have the intention that you will win. You want to be successful, have the intention that you will be successful. Attract that, and you know, that intention will attract it. That intention will make it happen. So positive self-talk and positive thoughts, when you try it, but you actually have to believe it though. Believe it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's real or not. Like I said, believe that thought. And once you actually believe it, when you actually try it and you believe it, you'll feel it. The mind changing.
Yeah.
You'll feel your body changing, and then all of a sudden you're achieving. And what happens? I had the flu in my past camp. I was sick for 3 weeks. I sparred for 2 weeks. I was doing worse and worse each week. I only started booming the last 2 weeks of an 8-week camp because I started changing my positive self-talk and my positive thoughts. You know what happened, Mo? We had the best ever performance of my career in my last fight. The international media was talking about it. The global audience was talking about it. Mm-hmm. And you already know I'm a Saudi boxer. Mm-hmm. The first ever. I'm on the big cards all the time and stuff. The haters are there.
Of course.
The haters had nothing to say. The only thing they could say was, hats off, because you're coming off a draw, a very tough fight, and you had a career best performance. But I credit all of this to Allah first, of course, but to positive self-talk and positive thoughts second.
Where does patience come in to all of this? What's your relationship like with being patient and waiting for what's to come your way?
So, you know, when I just touched on, you know, the actions are judged based on intentions. And this is where patience really plays a part. Because what do you understand patience to be? Most of us understand patience to be as how long we wait, right? How long we can wait for something to happen, or how long we can wait before something happens.
That you want to happen.
That you want to happen. That you really want to happen. How long can you wait for it? That's what we think patience is.
Correct.
You know what patience really is? It's how patience really is what are you doing? And how long are you doing it for while you are waiting?
Wow.
That's what patience is. So if you wait and do nothing and wait for something to happen, that's not patience.
So it's the behavior?
It's how long you can do something while you are waiting for it to happen. What are you doing for it to happen? And how long can you keep doing it for until it happens? That's real patience. Denzel Washington said, don't confuse movement with progress. Don't confuse movement with progress. If you are waiting for something to happen and you are just waiting, doing nothing, that is movement, not progress, right? You're just there. You think the patience is enough movement. I'm being patient. You know, God is going to reward me for my patience. Doesn't work like that. You have to work towards it. While you're patient, you have to work towards it, and it's not working for you. But how long are you going to keep working? How long are you going to keep looking for solutions? How long are you and how much are you going to look for ways for it to happen? And you try it once, it doesn't work. You try it twice, it doesn't work. You try it 3 times, it doesn't work. How patiently are you doing this stuff while you are waiting? That's real patience. So that's patience. And patience plays the biggest part when you are talking about achieving anything, being successful in anything, embracing any kind of emotion, going through anything in life. Patience is the key, but it means nothing without intention. Because if you don't have the intention that your work will lead to the breakthrough of patience, it won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Patience will beat you. You will get defeated by patience if you don't have the positive mind, the positive self-talk, the positive thoughts, but more importantly, the intention that it will happen. You don't have to intend that you will get there and you will do it, but have the intention that whatever happens is going to be good for me. I will get there, and if I get there, it's good. if I don't get there, it's good. Have that intention, because why not? Why not have that intention? So people always ask, but how can I have this? Why should I have this intention? I wanna expect the best, but prepare for the worst. If you prepare for the worst, you're gonna get the worst. If you prepare for the worst here, you're gonna prepare for the worst physically. And once you prepare for the worst, why should the universe and why should God give you the best? No, but expect the best and prepare for the worst. Doesn't work like that.
So think of the best, prepare for the best. And if the worst happens, deal with it then.
Don't even think about it.
It's like paying rent on something you're never going to use.
Don't even think about it until it happens.
Mm.
You prepare for the best and you expect the best.
Yeah.
Because why not? Because you know why? This is, the result is not defined by the journey. And the journey is not defined by the result. We need to separate both. The journey is one thing and the result is another. The journey can be amazing, but then the result could be something you didn't want for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that the journey has to be horrible. And then you could have a very tough journey, but the result can be amazing.
Yep.
So then you enjoy the result and you don't judge it based on the journey. So why not expect the best and hope for the best and prepare for the best? And if the best case scenario in your head happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, at least you had an amazing journey.
Yeah.
Where you expected the best and you prepared for the best. So you had a positive and enjoying journey. But if you are worried about the result the whole time, you're going to have a horrible journey. You're going to have a journey of stress, a journey of anxiety, a journey of pressure, a journey of fear, worry, doubt. Because that all comes from the future or the past.
Yeah.
If you stay in the present, you will never feel these emotions.
Yeah.
Never feel
anything. You want to enjoy the journey as well.
Enjoy the journey, but intend that it will work out.
Yeah.
It will work out. You will get what you want. You will win. You will achieve. You will be successful. It's not a matter of if, but when. And part of that when is maybe you won't get it here. You won't get it at point A that you are building for right now. If you don't achieve it at point A, still have the intention that I will achieve this. Maybe at point B. If it's not at point B, point C. But intend for it. Have the intention it will happen. Then patience will be a lot better, a lot easier. You get to work patiently. Enjoy life patiently. You don't have money now, it's okay. You will get money later on. You are not achieving like you used to, it's okay. You will. It's written for you. You will end up achieving like you used to. Maybe not exactly where you want to be, but you will. That's how life is. Ups and downs, and the ups wouldn't mean anything without the downs, and the downs wouldn't hurt enough if we didn't have the ups. We need to have it. So how are you going to run away from it?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't want to feel pain. They don't want to feel misery. But I think the best that life can get out of you is when you go through pain and misery. It builds character. And only then would you work even harder for something to the point where you never thought. Going through hard times creates a strong person. I know there's that saying, hard times create weak men create good times create. But if I can just sum that up, when you go through hardships, you know, nothing given, all earned, you eventually become the person you were supposed to be, as opposed to it being given to you. Imagine if you were given what you wanted from the age of like 12, 13, boxing world or not, you wouldn't have the work ethic that you have today.
And what would it mean? How would it feel? So
cheap.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Why does success feel a specific type of success? Why does it sometimes feel so good? Because it before it came such a horrible feeling of failure and pain.
Yeah.
You said so many people don't like to go through pain and failure. But then you're not going to really have that amazing taste of success and that amazing taste of achievement. For example, even on your own podcast, I'm pretty sure you've went through not only moments, but you've went through more moments where you thought this isn't going to work out, or I'm hitting a plateau, or I'm not competitive enough in the market. You've probably went through more moments like this than the moments where you felt like, okay, I'm here.
Absolutely.
I made it.
Absolutely.
But that's why the moments up there feel so good.
Yeah, yeah. The hard work.
Because you went through a horrible, I wouldn't say horrible, but a very painful time before it. And that's what really makes the success feel good, is all the emotions and the dips that come before it.
Harder you work, the better it tastes. Earlier, you sent me a line. You're like, Mo, let's discuss it. And I loved it. You don't judge action. We judge intention. Change perception of intention and action will change. Tell me more.
Mo, I love this because it's something that after our first podcast together, my first fight, what I went through the 7 fights after was dealing with the noise, dealing with the pressure, dealing with the noise, dealing with the actions of others, not just in boxing, but even in my personal life.
What were you hearing?
Just, you know, I again, people fear what they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
People don't necessarily don't like what you do or hate what you do or want to stop you in your tracks. People just fear what they don't understand. And the only way to honestly just get rid of fear is to prove it right, you know? So people have never seen a Saudi Arabian boxer before competing at the level I'm competing at, we are competing at competing at the level where we are achieving globally, internationally, on the biggest ever fight cards, you know, thanks to God, alhamdulillah, and the kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the leadership. But people have never seen it before.
Yeah.
People have never seen a Saudi beat an English. People have never seen a Saudi beat a Spanish, a Mexican, a Polish, a Hungarian. They've never seen it. So I would deal with a lot of noise and a lot of hate and a lot of scrutiny and a lot of naysayers. So this is true both in the sport and in life, both. The way we judge action is how we judge the intention. And how much of a toll it takes on us is how we perceive the intention. And what I mean by that is, in my personal life, of course, I've went through just as much as I did in boxing, where sometimes you love someone so much, or you trust someone so much, or you care for them so much, or even if you have a friend, if it's a relationship, if it's parents, if it's family, and they do something that hurts you, but you only let it hurt you because you judged the intention of it. For example, right now, when we were filming the podcast, you got 5 missed calls, right? These 5 missed calls could have been from someone you love, someone that loves you, someone that counts on you, and you didn't answer, you didn't pick up 5 times, right? That person now, depending on how they perceive your intention of not picking up 5 times, will depend on the action they judge you on and depend on the action they take. So it's easier to think negatively. It's easier to think Mo is ignoring me. He didn't pick up 5 times when I need him. I'm calling him 5 times. He's ignoring me. That's what he does when I call 5 times and he doesn't pick up. When really it was, maybe Mo was busy. Maybe Mo was filming a podcast. Maybe,
less people approach it that way.
Maybe because it's harder to approach it that way.
Yeah.
So it's always harder to see the positive and to think of the positive intention than it is to see the negative intention, because the negative intention give us a quicker feeling, give us a quicker solution.
Of justification.
Exactly.
I think the majority is negative.
The majority is negative because you don't have to look for it.
Yeah.
So it's a quicker solution, a quicker feeling. Mo didn't pick up the phone because he doesn't want to pick up the phone. He's ignoring me.
Yeah.
When, if you change the intention of someone's action, the way you think about it, the way you perceive the intention of his action, then the action itself will change.
Yeah.
If I call you and you don't pick up, and then I change that in my mind, maybe you didn't pick up because you were busy, you're going through a lot, maybe you're facing something, maybe you didn't see the phone. Then I rest. Then I'm calm. Then it doesn't affect me. It doesn't take a toll on me. So that's what I did in my career. with the haters, with the naysayers, with the people, you know, standing against my career, attacking my career, you know, a Saudi fighter, he's only getting this because he's Saudi, or he's only doing that because of Saudi. One, you don't get anything in this sport. You're standing in front of someone, you are going to fight, it's 1v1, and the best, the better of both of you is going to win that fight.
Nothing given.
But the only way I perceived it is people fear what they don't understand.
That's true.
And when I perceived it that way, I calmed down.
Yeah.
I stopped reading, I stopped looking, I stopped hating them like they might hate on my career. I stopped resenting them like they might resent my career. I just started thinking, they fear what they don't understand, but then soon they'll understand where I actually came from, how much I had to fight through, how much I had to push through, and then soon they'll understand that I am actually a very good fighter and this is happening and that. Then they'll understand and they'll stop doing that. So when you are met with questioning actions from someone you care about or an opinion you care about or someone you love, how about you sometimes take a pause and just give them the benefit of the doubt of the intention? Then you rest.
Where did you get all of this wisdom from? Has the sport taught you all of this? Or did you carry it prior?
My dad.
Your dad, huh?
My father. Mm. Everything I'm saying now today, anything coming out of my mouth, is all my father. When we were young, all of us, I guess, when you're younger, when your parents try to sit you down, especially when your father tries to sit you down for a lesson or for a talk or to give you one of those Arab fatherly lectures, we usually wait for it to be over. We want it to be over. You want to go do this or you want to go do that, or oh, okay, I'm going to sit down and you just want to get to the end of it. When you're younger and you didn't really go through life yet, and you didn't go through, you know, really the lessons that they're giving you the lectures for. When you didn't go through it yet, you just want it to be over. You just want to hear it and go. The older we get, the older I got personally, is when I realized how valuable those lessons really were. How valuable those lectures really were from my dad. Anytime now that he tells me, sit down, I want to tell you something, give it to me.
All ears.
I'm all ears. I want to listen if it's going to take an hour, if it's going to take two, not because it will matter 100% now, but I now know for a fact it will matter at some point in my life. So anything I say and everything I say is all my dad. He's always sat me down from when I was younger. And I guess he somehow, some way, really prepared me for everything I'm going to go through in life. That being, and a big part of it is the sport and being a professional athlete and being a professional boxer, you just go through more stuff earlier on. You go through more pressure, doubt, fear, worry, naysayers, haters, supporters. You go through that, the worst feeling in the world, you know. Never let success get to your head. Never let failure get to your heart. If you do any of that, you're done for. So he prepared me for that. He equipped me for that. He gave me what I'm telling you now, the intention, the action.
Yeah.
He told me, don't dwell on the past. You stay there. You have to move on. But yeah, the only way to move to the future is to work in the present. Everything. Why? Because they've went through it. So the older we get, the more we look back on the lectures and the lessons that we used to dwell on, that our parents used to give us, and we actually recognize how valuable they really, really are. And that's why I just get everything from my father. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here today with you even, just if I didn't have my father there.
You mentioned that pressure is a privilege. How so?
It means you're doing something right. Pressure means you're doing something that matters. Pressure means there are expectations put on you. So you see how I'm even talking about this now? You see how I'm just sending this frequency between us now where any normal, maybe our default setting is when you talk about pressure, you talk about pressure in a very you know, like a hidden demeanor, a very, you know, that pressure controls us when we have to enjoy pressure, because it means you're doing something special. Means you're doing something that matters. There are expectations put on you, yes,
yeah.
But why are the expectations there? Because you are doing something that someone is expecting something out of you. You are expecting something out of yourself. That is pressure. But it is a privilege, because you either do something that matters, do something where you have a big sense of responsibility, aim high, aim to achieve, aim to be successful. You either do that and feel pressure, or you stand in a corner and do nothing and feel nothing and go through nothing. It's okay. You can do that, but you will be standing in the corner doing nothing. So I changed what I was telling to myself, and I changed what I used to say to myself, and I changed how I thought about it, where I say now that I am not a victim to the pressure. I'm a superhero because of the pressure. We are not victims to the pressure. We are superheroes because of the pressure, because it's what pressure makes us do that actually makes us do it. It's what pressure pushes us to do that actually makes us do it. But how you perceive pressure is what will determine, will you enjoy doing it before it, during it, and after it? Will you enjoy it, or will you feel like it's taking a toll on you? Or will you feel like, I can't perform with this pressure there? So I love being in the position I'm in. Mo, I love being in the position that God put me in, where I could be the first ever Saudi professional boxer. Thousands are counting on me. Millions are counting on me. The leadership is counting on me. I have to fight against opponents who on paper are meant to beat me. On paper are actually meant to knock me out. I love that feeling.
That's pressure.
Well... Pressure is perspective, so that's what pressure is to me. So I love that, though, because if I didn't have all that weight on my back, all that pressure, all those expectations, this career would mean nothing.
Yeah.
What would it mean? And then how would I beat those strong, tough opponents if I didn't have that pressure on my back? That's why it's a privilege, because all my wins I credit to the pressure. All my success I credit to the pressure. All, you know, the achievements I credit to my pressure.
10 years from now, how would you define a successful career?
You had Her Royal Highness Princess Rima on your podcast, right? I actually said her exact words that I heard on your podcast in a DAZN interview a few months back, and they have it. Princess Rima said, you asked her that same question. You asked her, you told her, what do you want to be remembered for? And then she said, I want to be remembered for...
Leaving the door open
for the ones who will come after me. And in another interview, Princess Rima said also that real success is knowing when it's time to step down and give it to the ones who are coming after me.
What an answer.
An amazing answer. And it's the same answer I would give you now. 10 years from now, the only real way to judge my success in my career, our success in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, is how many talents and how many dreamers and how many achievers did we enable and empower through the dreamers and achievers that we are enabling and empowering now. So in my career, for example, being the first ever world champion doesn't matter. Being the first ever to fight in London, the O2 arena, doesn't matter. Being the first ever to fight in the US doesn't matter. What matters is being the first of many.
Yeah.
I want to be the first of many to do it. I want to be successful in the sense of I want to see more come after me now. They look at Zizo and they look at my career and they say, if he did it, I could do it.
Yeah.
I could do it bigger and I could do it better and I could achieve more. That's what will really make me feel like I was successful in my career. Because like Princess, like Royal Highness Princess Fima said, real success is having the humility to know when your time is done. When you've already done it, you've already climbed that ladder and it's time to now step down and give it for everyone who is coming after you. So that is a huge part of my success. But another huge part is, again, just being a figure.
You're the right person for this job.
I don't do this just to be a boxer or an athlete, because if I only just did it to be a boxer or an athlete, I would have retired a long time ago.
Yeah.
The sport is too much more.
Yeah, can imagine.
But because I get to be a voice for the kingdom, I get to be a representative, one of the representatives. Again, like Maali Turki al-Sheikh said, just a chess piece of what the kingdom is doing. I get to showcase it. I get to prove it internationally on the global stage. I get to prove to them that the kingdom is doing this, the kingdom is doing that. I get to speak it. I get to talk it, walk it, and change the perceptions and be a brand internationally. Someone from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the first Arab to do it on this level is Saudi.
We've never had that. Yeah.
That's what I live for.
You make us proud, brother. Thank you.
We only live up to you, really, Mo. Thank you.
No. I'm just a smaller chess piece. keep doing what you're doing, Ziza. Wallah. I mean, you know, I said it to you at the end of our first episode, and I'll say it again. You really make us proud when you're out there representing.
You're my big brother, Mo.
You
know
more ways than you know, honestly.
I always say that.
We love you for what you do, and you're, I mean, even outside of the ring, I mean, your words of motivation are just so micro segment worthy, you know? We can take like 100 different 15-second clips of this, and, you know, just like positive affirmation, for example. You know, that's something that we could all use a little bit more of, approaching things in a positive way. How the hell is it going to help you to think negative about a particular set of circumstances? You tell me how that's going to help you. It's not. But I can speak about myself. I sometimes go into autopilot and I worry about that. So you have touched me, as I'm sure you've touched many, many people in what you're doing. And this is just the beginning of your story. You're 24 years old, for goodness sake. Your future is, you don't mean to tell you this, but mashallah, your future is bright.
Inshallah.
And I will always be a supporter for life.
My brother,
love you, Habib.
Allah. You doing, man?